Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's Dealer On webinar. Become a car dog millionaire and sell more cars online. My name is Eliana Raggio and I'll be your moderator today. Today's webinar is being presented by Dealer On. For anyone who isn't familiar with Dealer On, well, we're an award-winning website development company and digital agency best known for our amazing SEO, the absolute best customer service, and the highest converting website designs in the industry, including the award-winning Chameleon Responsive Website Platform. We're so committed to lead conversion, optimization, and customer service that DealerOn is still the only company in the industry that offers a money-back lead guarantee program. Does your website company guarantee you a 50% lift in leads or your money back? Maybe you should check us out at our gorgeous brand-new DealerOn website at DealerOn.com. And we have a great show in store for you today. We're very pleased to have Jim Flint as our presenter today. Jim Flint is the president and founder of Local Search Group, which develops innovative automotive sales and marketing strategies for the 21st century. Flint's experience while working at the OEM level for Nissan and Toyota, as well as his years of retail automotive experience, provide him with a unique insight and foundation for creating real strategies dealers can put in place today. With his eye for meaningful detail and the ability to bring it all back to real retail implications, Jim Flint is widely recognized as a thought leader in automotive sales, marketing, and advertising. Jim is also the author of the newly released book, Car Dog Millionaire, and he can be reached at jim@localsearchgroup.com. Now, during the presentation, if you have any questions, please use the question feature located on the corner of your screen to submit them. At the end of the presentation, we'll answer those questions of general interest. If we're unable to get to your question live, we're going to try to respond by email later today. Also, don't forget, a link to download a copy of this webinar recording will also be emailed to you later today for your reference, and please feel free to share it with your friends and colleagues. And guess what? Our good friend Jim Flint is going to be giving away an awesome prize today on the webinar. Two of you lucky webinar attendees are going to win a copy of Jim's new book, Car Dog Millionaire, the book that will teach you step-by-step how to sell more cars and make more money at your internet dealership. Oh, heck yeah. You have to be on the live broadcast to win it, though. So stay tuned. You could be the one winning this amazing prize today. Also, at the conclusion of this webinar, you're going to receive a short survey. So fill it out, because we're always looking for quality feedback from our audience, and we want to hear from you, so let your opinion be heard. And hey, do you tweet much? We hope you do. We'd love to see what you have to say about today's presentation, so please tag us in it. You can use hashtag DealerOnWebby. I'm at Eliana Raggio. You can also hit up Jim Flint at JimFlint12 or at LocalSearchAuto. We look forward to seeing what you're saying. So let's get started. Let's hear how to become a car dog millionaire and sell more cars online. Jim Flint, thank you so much for being here today.
Eliana, thank you for having me again. I'm excited to be on air with you.
This is not your first time with me, but since the last time you were on my show, what, you figured you'd sit down and write a book? Not too shabby, my friend. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's kind of the last 5 years in the car business has been pretty exciting. So I put and took the time to put it all on paper. And for people that have been in the business, I know they'll appreciate the experiences that I've had at the dealerships. And for those people that might be new to the game, it certainly captures everything that we've been through in the last 4 or 5 years.
I love it. All right. Well, I know you have a lot to get to. I imagine becoming a car dog millionaire isn't simple. Might be easy, but it's not simple. Or maybe it's the other way. Yeah. It's simple, but it's not easy. Whichever. But I know you have a lot to get to. So where do we begin? What are the kinds of things we're going to be learning about today?
You know, it isn't necessarily simple, but it's a choice. You get to make a decision at some point in your automotive career. Do you want to do things the old way, the old school, right, like the car dogs have done? Or are you willing to embrace what's transpired with the internet, with Google, with Facebook, and really the marketing and advertising that goes into being an effective automotive retailer? Well, that's a decision about becoming a car dog millionaire. And if you do that, and because there are so many people online, you're going to have an ability to sell more cars and ultimately make more money, which is what, at the end of the day, automotive retail is about, all the while taking care of customers, because that probably more than ever before has become part of the process. And what we're going to do today is talk about those decisions, and each of these objectives that you're going to see here relate to different chapters from the book. So if you want to know more about increasing your ad dollars with tiers 1, 2, and 3 and their overall efficiency, Well, we'll reference a particular location, a particular chapter. If you want to know more about your Moneyball factor, which is very popular with dealers all across the nation because of its high correlation to profitability, you can dial into that, set up your tracking, and go to town on the efficiencies that brings to the tables for your dealerships. I like to say it's your make, your model, and your market. And if you think, despite all the digital dynamics that are in play, that the automotive industry is all about the technology, I tell you that that's not the case. People matter. And you want to hire a fire-breathing dragon tamer at your dealership. And we'll go through that people part of the business as well. And then finally, bring it all back together in terms of how you can track the inventory, sales personnel, and Moneyball factor to bring your dealership to new levels. And at the end, as you know, there will be those two giveaway items based on things I'll say during the presentation. And there'll also be a question and answer session. Sounds good?
That sounds awesome to me. We're already getting questions in from the audience, which is amazing. Some people have already read your book, and they want some more insight from you. So hopefully you'll be able to give it to them. Where do we begin?
I'm excited. Yeah. Well, I tell you, if you want to, Eliana, we can start out with the questions. I'm happy to answer them now. Or if you want to go to a poll question for the entire audience, it's up to you. It's your show. Thank you for having me here today.
Poll question it is. All right, audience, guess what? We have four poll questions that are coming at you today. And actually, there are questions that are coming out of the book. So if you've read the book, then this one might be familiar to you. But here it is. Which of the following ABA teams did not make it into the 1976 NBA merger? Please select one of the following. Do you think it was the San Antonio Spurs, the Denver Nuggets, the St. Louis Spirits, the Indiana Pacers, or I don't know anything about basketball? I might have to go with that last one. But we'll see. We'll see what the answer is in a little bit. Once we get a majority of the votes in, we're going to close the poll and share the results. And don't hold back on your questions, audience. I might hold on to them until the end of the presentation for our Q&A session. But if you have a question, send it on in, and we are looking forward to a very robust Q&A session. All right, the question once again, which of the following ABA teams did not make it into the 1976 NBA merger? San Antonio Spurs, the Denver Nuggets, the St. Louis Spirits, the Indiana Pacers, or I don't know anything about basketball. All right, well, we already have a majority of the votes. Audience, thank you so much for playing along with us. I really appreciate it. Jim, if you're ready, I'll close this poll and we'll see what the audience had to say.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm excited to see what they say.
All right, let's see. All right, 3% of today's audience think it was the Denver Nuggets. The majority, however, 72%, say that they think it's the St. Louis Spirits. And the remaining 24%, so almost a quarter of today's audience, says, I don't know anything about basketball. So, Jim, is there a correct answer to this? I assume there is.
Yeah, no, it's actually exciting. The 72% of the people were correct.
Yeah!
And at some level, the 24% are correct, too, because even though the trivia questions that open each chapter help answer something about the chapter, in this case, you're not going to be harmed in any way by not knowing anything about basketball. In fact, it actually may help you, because the point of this chapter is that when the ABA folded, for those basketball fans that are out there, one of the teams didn't make it into the league. But what they did have happen, they negotiated with the NBA, and they said, you know what, I'd like to have rights to a percentage of the TV contract that the NBA will ever have in perpetuity. So the St. Louis Spirit, even though they didn't exist, were still cashing checks from the NBA. Because when they reached that agreement, it was before Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan. And when those guys showed up on the scene and the NBA contracts became very lucrative, before the advent of cable TV and before the advent of big-time NBA basketball, well, once it went that route, they were where they needed to be. And that's the point of Chapter 2. You want to run the floor with Tiers 1, 2, and 3. You see, if you can get the support from your manufacturer, if you can get the support from your dealer association, then you, as a local auto dealer, can be more effective in your marketing messages. Because at the manufacturer level, you have to understand their allocation of resources. They have more money. And if you look at the traditional thinking between Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3, you'll know that Tier 1 means buy this brand. In other words, buy Toyota, buy Honda, buy Ford. Tier 2, typically for regional associations, is about the sales event. So you might have a Memorial Day sales event this month, and the regional association's job is to encourage a buy now message, limited time offers, things of that nature. And at a Tier 3 level, you want to get the consumer to come to your dealership and buy here. When you have a manufacturer who is launching a product, you want to know how much money they're putting into your market. And usually for most manufacturers, and it's detailed in the chapter, they will have what they will call spot markets. So when you look at the NADA numbers and you hear that dealers on average are spending $600 per car, and that's an important number to know, what's your cost per sale, then you might be able to lower your allocation of resources to get your brand message out to the market based on how much it is that the national auto manufacturers are spending. Thus, you'll be able to spend more of your dollars in the local market area. The same holds true for a regional dealer association. When they're putting event weight into a market like a month of May, or let's think, since we're from Texas, about a truck month, when a truck manufacturer puts a lot of money behind truck month to communicate that message, they are actually supporting your ability to serve as a catalyst for retail activity. In other words, they're going to drive people online to your website and then ultimately to your dealership. So as you look at that, and if you can figure out on a cost per sale basis that at a national level they're allocating $100, at a regional level they're allocating another $100, that simply means that at your dealership level, you might be able to spend that money more efficiently, and instead of spending $600 cost per sale, you can spend $400 cost per sale. And ironically, that's what the St. Louis Spirit did back in the day. They were able to take income in from the National Basketball Association as a way to generate revenue for a team that no longer played. So it was a kind of a remarkable experience. A lot of times, you'll see the OEMs send out spreadsheets like this with long-term national and regional initiatives. It's important to either complement or supplement the activity at your local dealership location based on the calendar. As I look at these broadcast calendars, I'll typically look at the payday weekends. I'll typically look at the holidays. I'll try to figure out when there's a five-weekend month. Like you can see April in this particular example, 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th, and the 1st, the last weekend of the month, falls on a Saturday, so you have a chance to communicate your message. And as you dovetail in with these different broadcast levels at a national and regional level, you want to make sure that you're doing the same thing at your dealer level with all the initiatives that you have, whether that's Auto Trader, whether that's KBB, Edmunds, your website, Google, Yahoo, Bing, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and who knows what's next, Snapchat even. So I think that's one of the most important things that a dealer can do as they begin this journey to becoming a CarDog millionaire. It's not about how much money you spend. It's about how efficiently you spend the money that you have. Here's another example of that dealership level flowchart built into to complement the national level initiatives. And you can see that you've got to make that decision to either complement or supplement the various activities that are going on for your dealer, whether that's TV, cable, radio, and then below that, the digital components. So that's one of the four chapters that we'll go over today. And as you look at the book, I've set each chapter up to stand alone so that if you're interested in a particular topic, you can dive deeper into it. Or if, for example, you might not be as interested in figuring out how to use multi-channel funnel elements for Google Analytics, you can either take it or leave it. You can move on from that chapter to the next. And so here in the presentation, let's move on to the next chapter and the next poll question. Back to you, Eliana.
All right. Thank you, Jim. All right. Second poll question is on the screen now. This is an interesting question. All right. I don't know how we got from basketball to Charles Darwin, but and yet we have. Here we go. Charles Darwin believed that evolution occurred. Please select one of the following answers. In quick random bursts of new species, gradually, as variations occurred through successive generations. Only in mammals, gradually, after all of the weak ones were eliminated, or Charles Darwin was a quack. Yeah, that's right. All right, so we want to know what you think. What do you think about Charles Darwin and his theory of evolution? Please pick one of the following answers, and once we get a majority of the votes in, we're going to close the poll and share the results. And, of course, audience, we love when you get involved with our poll questions. They just let us know that you're paying attention, I guess, but they also let us know what's going on at your dealership, although this one has to do with Charles Darwin. All right, so Charles Darwin believed that evolution occurred in quick random bursts of new species, gradually as variations occurred through successive generations, only in mammals, gradually after all the weak ones were eliminated, or, yeah, Charles Darwin was a quack. All right. We have already got a majority of the votes in. More votes are coming in. I love it. My audience is awesome today. Hey, Jim, you let me know when you want me to cut this thing off, and we will check out the answers from the audience.
Let's rock and roll. Let's see what they have to say.
All right. Almost everyone's voted now. Thank you so much, audience. You guys are great. Okay. 5% of today's audience say they believe Charles Darwin's theory of evolution occurred in quick, random bursts of new species. The majority, however, 74% of today's audience, say that Charles Darwin's theory of evolution occurred gradually as variations occurred through successive generations. No one said that it only occurred in mammals. 11% of today's audience think that it occurred gradually after all of the weak ones were eliminated, and the remaining 11%, yeah, they think Charles Darwin was a quack. Is there a correct answer to this?
Yeah, again, majority rules, but I see where the people are going. Gradually, after they're eliminated, or that he was a quack. Well, yeah, those weren't the right answers, but in the spirit of having a good time, we're going to keep, you know, charging ahead.
All right. Thank you so much, audience.
Good stuff. You know, as you look at that, this leans into Chapter 3, where we talk about tracking your money ball factor, not necessarily your leads. I've worked with dealerships all across the nation, and really kind of in the last couple of years, there's been a few tough conversations to have. One of them has been the idea that sales have been going up while leads have been going down, because traditionally we've thought about leads as the activity that ultimately leads to a sale, and that's not necessarily the case anymore. Things are actually negatively correlated when one thing goes up and the other thing goes down. So as I'm talking to internet directors and BDC managers and GSMs, general managers and dealer principals, I'm trying to get everybody to pull on the rope in the same direction. And what I found was that the one thing that we could all agree upon was the evolution of the consumer. They had started moving online. They had started looking on Google Analytics at the vehicles that we had the ability to sell. And it didn't all happen overnight. It happened actually gradually as variations were retained through successive generations. We're seeing it more so every day as Gen Y continues to gain in volume and spending power. And so as you look, I would tell you that the purchase funnel that we're most familiar with historically is on the left-hand side. And those things are very much today still important. It's just that with the web, everything got collapsed onto what amounts to your smartphone now. It used to be, back in the day, if you wanted to create awareness, you'd utilize TV. Well, you can create awareness through SEO efforts, through SEM. You can create consideration as people look at the different models. Do I want to buy a Honda Civic or do I want to buy a Nissan Sentra? And as you force your way down through the funnel from the CarDog way of doing business, you have to realize that CarDog millionaires understand that we're getting squeezed in the middle. Fewer leads, fewer floor ups. The good news is the model still works because sales are still happening. But if you've seen the numbers and you know that historically consumers, say 10 years ago, would visit 5 car dealerships before they purchased a car, you know today it's less than 2. So the closing ratios have to go up, and that's where the money ball factor comes in, because it is, to me, the most effective way to get your general manager, your desk managers, your internet directors all on the same page. And let's see, Eliana, you mentioned to me that you just got a question, so I'm going to interrupt real quick. Let's see. Oh, she's saying we're looking forward to answering all the questions at the end of the Q&A session. So if you're online and in the chat, you can see that. So the Moneyball factor that most people utilize that got everybody on the same page came down to two things that we couldn't argue about. You see, I was trying to track closing ratios because I thought that's what ultimately predicted sales most effectively. And closing ratios aren't the best way to track things, especially when it comes from a CRM. As you think about your pay plan, if you have a pay plan that rewards you for closing 10% of the deals that come through your lead system, well, if I'm the internet director, I'm going to influence that outcome by possibly not entering in every lead that I picked up this weekend from a rock concert where we were kind of a brand sponsor. I might want to make sure that I hit my 10%, and if I get a bunch of fluffy leads that aren't really people interested in that, they might be more interested in signing up for my lead program and getting a T-shirt than they are in buying a car, and it's going to cost me money at the end of the month, I'm less likely to count that in my CRM number and submit that to my GM for payment of my pay plan. So the two places where it's hard to argue are from Google Analytics, which directionally is correct. It indicates the number of people that are online in a given month looking at the cars that you have the ability to sell. And so at some level, we started this at the beginning of this book, say 2008, 2009, there were about 5,000 visitors that would go to a dealership in a major metro market for a major OEM. Today, it's north of 30,000 visitors. So as you look at the volume and where the people are, they've gone online. So that's one key component of shopping behavior. Shopping and tracking no longer starts in your CRM. It truly starts in Google Analytics. And then the second component that's huge is the total number of vehicle sales that you have as printed on your financial statement. And not just new vehicle sales. We're talking new and used. And as you do this calculation over and over again, month to month, and correlate it back to the profitability of your dealership, you're going to find that this is closely related to the performance of your dealership, not only from a sales volume perspective, but more importantly from a profitability perspective. And what I found over the years in tracking numerous dealerships is that dealerships have a tendency to maximize their profitability around a Moneyball factor of 2.0. One quick disclaimer. You've got to track it for your makes, your models, and your markets. The Mazda store in one part of town might perform differently than the Mazda store in a different part of town. And the Toyota store in California might perform differently than the Toyota store in New York. So you want to kind of use this as a reference point against yourself. But suffice it to say that if after you track your Moneyball factor, you recognize that it's routinely running below 2, and by below 2, I mean down at 1.0 or 0.9 or 0.8, you're really overacting. You're getting all this web traffic that you're not converting into car sales. You might be advertising so much that your operators can't handle the call volumes. You see, at that point, I start pressing on the operational capabilities that are important to executing the sale. Versus at 2.0, historically, I've seen that dealerships have that sweet spot. Whether it's August, a great sales month, or October, which on the calendar are only separated by 40 days, you have to maintain that level of performance. Seasonality affects our industry unlike any other. And then finally, on this Moneyball factor component, which is really exciting if you can get your head around it and track it each month, you'll find that if you're at a level, let's call it 5.0, for every 100 visitors you get to your dealership website, you're closing 5 deals. You're probably under-advertising. You have an ability to put more bandwidth through the pipe. I mean, my gosh, if you're closing 5 out of 100 leads that come to your website, and not leads, but visitors, I should say that carefully and correctly. If you're closing 5 out of every 100 visitors to your website, it might be time to be looking about acquiring another franchise, calling your OEM and saying, I think I'm ready for an open point, because you're killing it at all kinds of new levels. So those are the guidelines that I found over the years. But again, measuring this at your dealership level is going to be the key, ultimately, to your success. Eliana?
Yes,
I think
sir.
We're back to another poll question.
Yes, we are. All right, audience, your third poll question is on the screen now, and we want to know, what term refers to a person who fails to live up to their early promise? These questions are so funny, Jim. How you relate these crazy questions back to a lesson in automotive advertising is beyond me. I definitely have to read this book. All right. What term refers to a person who fails to live up their early promise? Please select one of the answers. Is it babe in the woods, stick in the mud, flash in the pan, ace in the hole, or pain in the butt? Once we get a majority of the votes in, we will close this poll and share the results. And I swear that there is a handful of people out there who will select the last answer no matter what the question is.
I think it's going to be higher than 10%.
Let's see. All right, votes are still coming in. Audience, you are being so good to me today. Thank you so much for being amazing and answering our poll questions. More votes are still coming in, so we'll give it a few more seconds. Once again, what term refers to a person who fails to live up to their early promise? Babe in the woods, stick in the mud, flash in the pan, ace in the hole, or pain in the butt. That's right.
Have you seen the movie Slumdog Millionaire?
Absolutely. That was an amazing movie.
Yeah, that's kind of the premise here. If you remember, he wins the $1 million, but it was the experiences he had that actually allowed him to answer all the questions correctly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's where we tie it back into the book and each of the chapters representing one of these trivia questions.
Very, very cool. I love it. I can't wait to get my copy, Jim. All right. Here we go. Exactly. I know. All right. Here we go. We're going to close this poll and share the results. Audience, thank you in advance for your amazing answers. All right. Here we go. 6% of today's audience say that it is Babe in the Woods. 13% of today's audience think it's Stick in the Mud. The majority, 75% of today's audience, say it's Flash in the Pan. No one picked Ace in the Hole. And, of course, we have 6% of today's audience who believe it's Pain in the Butt. So, Jim, what's the right answer?
We've got a group here today that is dead set on, 75%. It's going to be the Flash in the Pan.
Flash in the Pan. I'm with you with that 6%, though. I'm with you.
This actually is chapter 6. I called it Economies of Fail. As we started tracking all the internet sales that we were acquiring at the group I was working with, we were basically connecting any phone call or any lead that came in from an internet source to a retail delivery as an internet sale. And as we move that number from literally 20 to 30 to 40% pretty quickly, my goal was to get our group to sell more than 10,000 units collectively. And one year we had, a 37% increase. We took the total for the group up to 9,477 cars sold on the internet. It was about 40% of the total volume for the dealerships, to kind of give you an idea of where we were at that time. And I thought for sure, based on the previous run rate, based on the number of people that were going online, that we should the next year sell well over 10,000 vehicles through the internet. But the reality was, before we got to that point, we got to a level of about the following year, 9,700. And it wasn't that car sales weren't up. They were. And it wasn't that people weren't going online. They were. Even for each of those two things, we're increasing double digits. But our internet trackable sales were not happening. And as I kept looking at the statistics and looking at the numbers and looking at the analytics, I finally came back to this one experience that I had with multiple people that helped me realize what it was that was going on. You see, as we were trying to climb the proverbial hill, we were spending part of our time that we used to spend on the sales part of the business in the marketing part of the job. In fact, there's an excerpt, and I think you're going to send it out later, Eliana, from Strategy Mob. Brent Weaves, my friend from Canada, and his team have put together a great magazine of articles from industry people for industry people. And in there, we detail the actual experience of what happened. And it was simply that this guy, who the year before was rocking it, selling cars, looking at closing ratios, inspecting what he expected on phone calls, coaching his team up, setting up appointments, visiting with the desk, talking to the used car, new car directors, making sure that the pictures were properly positioned online, making sure that the vehicle display page count was in the right spot. He got distracted by marketing, and all of a sudden, he was spending his time calling me, asking me why the Scion TC didn't have Blizzard Pearl listed for search terms. He became mesmerized with Google, and I was real candid with him, why and how many customers do we think will search for Blizzard Pearl? Will they more often than not search for white? And on Scion in particular, what are we trying to do to get to those customers in the right way? He started building banner ads on Facebook, thinking that acquiring likers was going to lead indirectly to more sales. And while Facebook may get you there today, back then he wasn't dialed into the selling activity. He was dialing into the marketing activity. And I knew he had crossed the bridge to the wrong side of the path when he started showing me the banner ads that were on his website. He had taken a deal from Jimmy Kimmel with a moon in the background, and he had taken his cars and highlighted them with a halo, and there was a silhouette of downtown that he had blackened out, and it was a blue sky, and there were stars that were sparkling. And I asked him how long it took him to make all that material come together, and he said it took about 6 hours. And it hit me at that point. He was no longer focused on selling cars. He was focusing on marketing cars. And a lot of dealers get to this point very quickly, because when you don't understand something, and to be candid, for many of the owners and many of the general managers in place today, there really wasn't an internet department as they were coming up through the business. And they've got somebody in the back who's handling the BBC and all the internet. And so what they do is say, hey, just make sure the specials are right. Hey, the banner ads, can you take care of those? Hey, I looked and I didn't see where our name showed up first on the Google search that I did for this particular make and model. And so they spend their time, they spend their days not coaching their team, not selling their cars, but working through all of those little marketing dynamics. Moreover, sometimes it even gets to the place where people start asking the internet director to fix their printers. My printer doesn't work. Those kind of conversations as a leadership team and as an employee have to be checked at the door, because if you're doing those kinds of things with your most talented managers and leaders, then you're not spending your time getting the closing ratios you need, not getting the appointments you need, not following up properly with the consumers in the way that they like to be followed up on. There is a great video that, if you haven't seen it, I would encourage you after the conclusion of this webinar to look at, not now, because we're going to finish strong with a couple more chapters. But Joe Webb and Bill Playford created a video called The De-Evolution of the Internet Sales Manager. You'll find it on YouTube, and anybody who's been in the business will see the continued escalation of work responsibilities to this one place in the car dealership. And in large part, and Joe characterizes it very well, it can be because the dealer principal may not understand all the things that are in play. So as a dealer principal, you know, I would encourage you to make sure that you use a job description to get the right person in the right spot for each of the two roles that you need to have to be successful. I wish I could tell you that it's only one spot that's needed, but it's actually two. And here's the other key takeaway. As you look forward to the future of automotive retailing, we've always thought that the general manager had to have a turn in F&I, because if you structured deals properly, then you could lead the organization to make sure you would maximize retail opportunity when it presented itself to you. But anymore, I still agree somebody has to sit in that F&I chair or understand how deals are structured, but they're also going to have to be able to understand how the internet functions, and really will have to have spent some time in the BDC managing people, looking at the communications, understanding what chat is about, understanding about the different leads that come in from the different lead providers and how that whole system functions. So to help in that regard, and you can email right now to jordan@localsearchgroup.com. She's on standby. She has a copy of each of those two job descriptions that she will just hit you right back with. And so if you're in the middle of that mess where you're trying to do the printing, the promotions, and manage the people to set the appointments to sell the cars, you got to figure out the best way to divide and conquer. And the first way to do that, in my historical experience, has been to understand and define what the job responsibilities are. So I think the group will find that very helpful. At the end of the day, if you're adding too many projects to the internet manager, you're just creating distractions that are going to keep him or her from selling cars. Eliana, back to you in the studio.
Wow. That, can I just tell you, I hope somebody tweeted out that quote that you did, because that got me, the one where you said, this gentleman wasn't, he didn't want to sell cars, he wanted to market the cars. That was really, really a great, great session. So thank you so much for that. Okay, last question is on the screen now, audience. We want to know, do you have an answer to it? What Atlantic region did five U.S. Navy Avenger airplanes mysteriously vanish from while passing through? Please select one of the following answers. Do you believe it's the 49th parallel, the Suzuki Sea, Hurricane Bay, the Bermuda Triangle, or Margaritaville? Oh, it is Cinco de Mayo. All right. And we have a number of questions that have come in from the audience. So, audience, if you haven't gotten in your question in yet, for Jim Flint, author of How to Become a Car Dog Millionaire. It's more than just Car Dog Millionaire, right? It's How to Become a Car Dog Millionaire and Sell More Cars Online. Yes, send it in. All right. So the question again, what Atlantic region did five U.S. Navy Avenger airplanes mysteriously vanish from while passing through? The 49th parallel, Suzuki Sea, Hurricane Bay, Bermuda Triangle, or Margaritaville? And we already have a majority of the votes in. My audience is on point today. So, Jim, are you ready to see what they had to say?
I am ready, but one quick disclaimer. If they buy the book, there's only going to be A, B, C, and D. So I want to give proper credit to you for adding in that fifth option, which has been so entertaining today. And the timing on Margaritaville, you can't beat that.
I mean,
it is Cinco de Mayo.
I'm not going to lie. I came up with that one first, and then I filled in the rest. We're going to close this poll and share the results. All right, 7% of today's audience think it's the 49th parallel. No one said Suzuki Sea or Hurricane Bay, but the majority, 87%, said it was the Bermuda Triangle. And the remaining 7%, well, they think it's Margaritaville. I'm with you people.
I'm going to lunch right now.
I'm sure Jim Flint has the correct answer for us, don't you, Jim?
Absolutely. If you kind of dig into it, it's the Bermuda Triangle. And the one thing that's hit me in the automotive industry probably more than any other, because I'm more about, well, the best way to say it is, it's not about spending more money. It's about being more efficient. And maybe that's probably the biggest change that's happened since, you know, the 80s and 90s when you put in the four-page newspaper insert to today, where it's all about trying to find that person when it is that they're ready to buy. And so as I circulate through and in Chapter 10, we talk about setting smart goals to avoid getting lost at sea. It's ironic. The setup here will take you an hour, and then the tracking to be successful will take you 5 minutes each month. And it's really meant for general managers and dealer principals, but I assure you that general sales managers or even internet directors can utilize this information. Moreover, as a marketing director, my gosh, if I were a GM and I had a marketing director come to me with this information, I would get that they totally get it. And as you drill down, there are three things that drive the most expense and drive our best ability to do business at Retail Automotive. And if you aren't synced up with personnel, website visitors, and your inventory, then you're going to miss opportunities to do business, or even worse, you're going to overextend yourself when you don't need to. And so what we talk about are these formulas. I'm very operationally minded. There are spreadsheets that we have. If after you read the book it doesn't click for you, certainly I'd be happy to talk with you and help you get your thing set up. But as you look at the inventory formulas, you're basically going to sell somewhere around half of the cars you have on ground each month. If you have a 60-day supply, right, and you have 100 new cars on ground, that means you're going to sell 50 in that particular given month. If you have a different ratio for used cars, you want to factor that in. But this is all about setting a goal. This is about setting some direction. This is taking the hope and the pray and the wish out of it and basically saying, wait a second, if I have this many cars and I can sell at this rate, then I'll be able to sell, in this case, 50 new cars to keep it simple. Now, that's one piece of the puzzle. If that's not intact, then I wouldn't advertise. I wouldn't spend a dime. But you've got to understand how many cars you're trying to sell. So in this particular example, we're going to say 50 is the number. At that point, I know I've got to have the personnel in place as well. And to keep the numbers round, I'll tell you that you've got to have motivated salespeople. And those motivated salespeople can sell 10 cars per month. Now, NADA will tell you that the number is closer to 8.5. So I'm going to round up to 10. And I know right now there's a lot of people out there that are thinking that it's, well, my guys sell 15. Or they sell 20. And you know what? They may. Your best may. And then there'll be another secondary group who will sell 15 or 20 in a given month, like a 5-week in May. And then in June, they slow down. In June, they take that vacation. In June, they're a 7-car guy. So on average, you know, that 15-car month that we talk about becomes 10 or 11 units, right? The 15 and 7, with 15 in May and 7 in June, turns into 11 over that 2-month average. But if I have, in that case, only 2 people selling cars for me, I'm not going to spend a dime on advertising because I need to go hire some people to sell the cars that I have on ground. So those are the first 2 steps that are there. Now, on the other side, and this is where the Moneyball factor comes back into play that we talked about a little bit earlier, and we drilled down on this in the book, you know that each month your Moneyball factor is 2.0. And so if you have the 10,000 visitors to your website in a given month, you have the ability to sell, in this case, 200 cars. You don't need to spend more money on advertising. You need to go call your manufacturer and get more inventory on ground, and you need to get more people to help you sell the cars that you have the ability to sell. If anything, if you're at 10,000 website visitors, you have a Moneyball factor of 1.0, right? You'd be able to sell 100 units. You don't need to spend the time trying to drive additional website traffic. The time where you need to spend website traffic in this example would be if you had 400 cars on. Now we're in the game, because with 400 cars on ground, I can sell 200 cars a month, I get 20 salespeople, and I get my Moneyball factor at 2.0 with 10,000 website visitors. If I had been averaging 8,000 website visitors, that's when I call Jim Flint at Local Search Group or Eliana at Dealer On and try to figure out how I can drive more traffic through my pipeline. So it's all about looking at where the bandwidth is, looking at where the limits are, and then each month adjusting accordingly. Over the course of a year, spending 5 minutes each month, which totals to 1 hour, plus the 1 hour it's going to take you to set up this spreadsheet, is going to, in my mind, return millions of dollars to you. That's why I call it Car Dog Millionaire. And if you don't want to do this, and I mean this in the most respectful retail automotive way that I can say it, you're just going to be a car dog. And that's a choice we get to make each and every day. Do we want to be a car dog or a car dog millionaire? So as a final closeout, I will just mention that the book in and of itself is available on Amazon. You can buy the Kindle version of it, the audio book. It's not me. So if you love my voice, I've got
you're in for a disappointment.
I was told by a dealer out of St. Louis that they need to speed up the audiobook to about 2.5 times, and then he starts to sound like me. So other than that, I think you'll very much enjoy the gentleman that we selected. He does some national work, has a very rich voice. Eliana, you know, I probably should have called you before I went to market with it. But
I think you did
if we rework it, we'll be in reaching out to you. There's also hardback and paperback available on Amazon. So, Eliana, if I'm turning it back over to you, let me know. But these are the key action items that from the very beginning where we set objectives, we're going to read the book. As dealerships, I know a dealer out of Michigan bought 10 copies and is sharing it with his team, and they're each going over a different chapter. That's one way to go about this. I know that some OEMs, Toyota division in particular, is taking the book and looking at each of the chapters. Not only are there 17 chapters where we're actually answering the trivia questions that makes our business unique, but for those of you that are more into kind of the relationship aspect of what goes on, there are closing chapters where it's conversations I've actually had with dealers that if you've been in this space, I think you'll find very entertaining, but also very authentic. It's about the real fear, the real opportunity that have been combined in the internet aspect of our business. And then finally, the action item from the chapters that we just discussed includes spending the 2 hours for the entire year, 5 minutes a month, and 1 hour setting it up, so 2 hours in total, to look at your automotive Bermuda Triangle and to make sure that you've got a plan that fits your personnel, your inventory, and your advertising into a tight-knit, coordinated effort. And then the last bullet point we have here, if you haven't emailed Jordan for the people part of the business and making sure that you've got the right salesperson and that you've got the right marketing person, we've got those job descriptions available for you to help you out in that regard.
I see a big question mark on the screen. That's right, audience. If you haven't gotten in your question yet for today's Dealer On presenter, Jim Flint, now is the perfect time to send those questions in. We're going to be getting to the Q&A session in just a moment. Before we do that, I want to remind you, even before that. But thanks, Jim. You're making me laugh. Even before that, I want to direct everyone's attention to the handouts section of the GoToWebinar interface. Check out that handout section. We have two handouts for you today. Handout number one is going to be today's slide deck, direct from Jim. So you'll see that in there for immediate download. And the other handout is what Jim had alluded to earlier, which was an excerpt on strategy mob crop. I have no idea what that means. Jim, you might have to go back and tell me again what that means. Tell the audience what that is.
Strategy mob is actually a group of people that are providing it's a magazine, really, that comes out of Canada. Brent Wies is one of the catalysts behind it. He and I have worked together for many years, and he asked me to contribute. I did, and you'll find great articles from guys like Kevin Fry. I wouldn't be surprised if Dealer On's very own Sean Raines weren't involved, or Craig Gifford. I mean, some of the leading thought people in the industry are contributing. If you get a chance to check it out, it's certainly a worthwhile read.
Okay, so this is an actual article that you wrote that was published in that magazine, correct?
Exactly.
Exactly. All right, audience. So you have a couple of handouts over there for your enjoyment and assistance. And now we're going to get to that part of the show. I wish I had some game show music and a cool hat, but it's that time. If you missed it at the beginning of the webinar, I announced that our good friend Jim Flint has given away a couple of awesome prizes today on the webinar. That's right. Two of you lucky webinar attendees are going to win a copy of his new book, Car Dog Millionaire. Awesome, right? All you have to do is answer a simple question about the presentation that you just saw. So get ready and get to your keyboards, everyone. First one to write in a correct response to one of our giveaway questions is going to be walking away with this cool prize today. Of course, vendors, we love that you come to our show, but we're going to ask you to kindly sit this one out. This prize is intended for dealership personnel only, but we do appreciate you being here. All right, here you go, everyone. Good luck. Here's the first question. This is to win one book, all right? What is the nickname of the local search group Car Dog mascot? Oh, I hope you guys are paying attention.
Well, they had to be looking at the slide.
They did. They did. Josh Fillmore did. He's our winner today. Josh Fillmore, first person to write in, had the correct response. Congratulations, Josh Fillmore. That's right. The dog's name is Otto. It's very cute. Hey, Josh, write on in. Let me know what dealership you're from, and also a mailing address so we can get that book out to you as soon as possible. Of course, your Car Dog Millionaire book is going to come to you directly from our friends over at Local Search Group. All right, everyone, guess what? You have one more chance to win, so get to your keyboards. Get ready, everyone. This is an easy question. Fastest Finger is going to win this one. All right, here it goes. Good luck. The Moneyball factor maximizes profitability at what level? That's right. Let's see. Who was the first one to write in? Oh, my gosh. David Sharp. David Sharp, you're our winner today. Yay. David Sharp. Elliott Auto Group, is it? I don't know. David, write on in. The answer, the correct answer was 2.0. Congratulations. All right, David, don't forget to send in your mailing address as well. And so David Sharp is with Elliott Auto Group, and Josh Fillmore is with Regional Wholesale Incorporated in Haines City, Florida. We're going to be getting those books out to you very soon. They're going to come directly from a local search group. And, of course, look, I know not everyone could win a book today. I know. But you know what? We give away cool prizes every week on the Dealer On webinar. So today wasn't your day. It's okay. Come on back for another Dealer On webinar. And who knows, that could be the day that you score a cool prize on a Dealer On webinar. But for right now, we're going to thank our good friend Jim Flint for his very cool and innovative and generous giveaway today. And, of course, like I said, we got to thank David Sharp and Josh Fillmore. Congratulations on your big win. Enjoy the book. I'm waiting for my copy too, guys. All right, so here we go. Thank you, everyone, for playing along. And if you're ready, we're going to get to the Q&A session now. Jim, what do you think?
I'm in. I'm actually going to turn the camera on.
Oh, gosh. All right, I'll turn mine on too. Hi, everyone.
You're ready?
All right. Let's see. What is the first question? Oh, yeah, this question came in super, super duper early. All right. This one came in from Rob, and it says, I read your book, and you said in the book that we should have a 25% close ratio on internet leads, but I'm not sure how with your other math that would work. That's the whole question in its entirety. That came from Rob.
No, Rob, that's a great question. In fact, you know, the numbers, the number today, and it keeps moving, and I don't mean to move the number on you, but leads are going down, sales are going up, and the closing ratio that needs to be about 50% or higher is in terms of the floor traffic that comes to your dealership. I know back in, gosh, man, it was early 2000s, maybe 2005, if you had like a 15% closing ratio, you were out there writing books at that time, and gosh, I was reading them. And I know all the people in the industry thought that would be remarkable, right? Just close 10% and you were pretty safe in retaining and maintaining your job. Well, you're going to have to close at higher and higher ratios every day, because as people know more about the used car vehicles, for example, that you have, they're submitting fewer and fewer leads. They're looking at more and more pictures. And when they walk in the door, they're telling you what they want. And so people go through the least amount of pain possible to complete a transaction with a car dealer, right? It's like they'll get their information together. They're used to having different experiences, if you think about Amazon. And when they come in and they know the price and they know the product, they just want to have you help them acquire it. So as you look at the wisdom of the masses, I think anymore people look at reviews online. And if they make a decision that you're not worth doing business with because they're going to give the first shot to the person the closest to them, then they'll go to another dealership. But literally, they're only going to go to two places, right? If you believe the numbers, now that they're down below two visits, they're at either 1.6 or 1.2. If consumers are on average only going to 1.2 dealerships, you realize that what the closing ratio should be? They should be closer to 100%, if not 80%. So I would tell you that your percentage of closed leads, while you should track it and understand it, I would expect that it would go down over time, and I would hate for that to be part of your pay plan. Sorry to say it, but it's the way I feel.
Okay, he's not pulling any punches, is he? All right, Rob. We have another question from Rob in a little bit, but Rob, thank you so much for this one. That was a good one.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Hey, you know what? I also want to remind the audience. Now, this, like I said earlier, is not Jim Flint's first appearance on my show. So if you're curious about some of the terms that he's used, guess what? He's already done webinars on those. So you can check them out over at dealeron.com/webinar and click on the link for previous webinars. For instance, he has done a webinar on the automotive Bermuda Triangle, and he's done another webinar specifically all about moneyballing. So you want to check those out. They were both really amazing. That's why I had him back on the show again, all right? So check those out, and you will not be disappointed. All right, next question comes to you from Thomas. He says, how can you judge website visitors and not attempt to remove service customers? Oh, yeah, in your formula, you said to take the number and then multiply it by website visitors. So he's wondering, should you remove service customers from that first? And then it goes on to say, plus, certain visitors are less valuable and can skew the statistics. For example, a visit from a remarketing ad.
Thomas, those are great questions, and I'll tell you what I did, because I started to go the path that you are talking about, and then I went a totally different way. I thought, well, wait a second. I need to know how many repair orders I'm getting as a percentage of the website visitors. So depending upon whether or not you have a quick lube service location, you should be trying to have 11.2 out of the 100 visitors that are coming to your website scheduling some type of repair order, oil change with you, some type of business activity. Because you see, at the end of the day, if I've got 100 people that are coming to my website and I sell two of them a car, new or used, and I've got 11.2 of them that are conducting business with me on the service drive, that's good. I've monetized 13% of the traffic that has come to my website. Need to figure out what to do with the other 87%. Right, but you can start breaking this stuff down categorically and start trying to monetize your website. At the end of the day, you also mentioned in Eliana's question that the remarketing visitors might be less valuable to you. There is actually a chapter, and Google's really down this path of attribution modeling. And what I want to know is, of all the things that I'm doing from an advertising and a marketing perspective, what is it that's driving the ultimate conversion that I want? And one of the conversions that we want consumers to visit at least 7 vehicle display pages. Because at the point that they start doing that, I know I've got a shopper. I know that I've got a prospective buyer. If I see a visitor from a tablet that comes to my website and leaves immediately upon seeing the website, I'm thinking that my advertising that occurred during the evening news when they went online, it's effective in terms of name recognition and creating a brand experience, but it's not effective in terms of creating a retail experience. And so that's why you hear a lot of guys talk about vehicle display pages. They're all good things in moderation, but all good things, if you can track it, you should do it. If you can't track it, I wouldn't do it. And so it sounds like you're down that path. There is a chapter in the book that details how to set up multi-channel funnels for your dealership. If you want to figure out, and this is the ultimate litmus test, Eliana, want to figure out if Facebook or Auto Trader is contributing more to the retail activity that's happening at your store, you can do that through following the guidelines that have been set up by Google and that I've kind of documented in the pages.
One of our winners today, David Sharp, he just wrote in, now I really can't wait to get this book. All right. Hey, Jim, I have a favor to ask you. Could you go to the slide with your headshot on it? Because only there you go. Perfect. Thank you so much. All right, Thomas, thank you for the great question. You got Jim all excited now.
Yeah.
All right. Next question comes to you from Scott. And Scott says, how does bounce rate affect the moneyball factor equation?
I will tell you, Scott, that's a good question. And I would tell you that bounce rate is not affected in terms of the moneyball equation. You see, interestingly enough, and we've put together software that actually takes a visitor to the used car inventory. If somebody searches for a year, a make, and a model, or better yet, let's go down the path of they search for your dealership's name. Maybe all they wanted was your phone number. So they get your phone number and then they bounce off the site.
Right.
Well, if they call you, the likelihood that they're going to monetize with you and do business of some sort, whether it's service, repair order, or buy a new car or buy a used car, that likelihood is increased. So to think that there's a relationship, and I've run the numbers, there is not a relationship between bounce rate and the money ball factor. They're independently operated.
Oh, okay. Scott, if you have a follow-up question, let us know. All right, your next question, again about Moneyball. You guys have to go visit that webinar that we did on Moneyball. It was really, really good. Yeah. This one, again, comes from Rob, and he says, can you better explain the Moneyball factor? So I don't want you to go too into-depth because we still have a lot of other questions to get to. But Rob, just so you know, like I said, we did a whole hour and a half webinar just on Moneyball, so you definitely going to want to check that out. But can you just like sum it up for us real quick, Jim?
So 200 cars, you had 10,000 visitors to your website, your Moneyball factor is 2.0. That simple. You sell 100 cars, your Moneyball factor is 1.0.
So it depends on how many cars you have on your lot?
No. Depends on how many cars you've sold as evidenced on your financial statement, divided by the number of visitors to your website.
Got you. Okay. So let's go to – okay, so Rob says, thank you, got it. We'll also check out the webinar. Good move, Rob.
Thanks,
thank you
Rob.
So much. All right. Larry wrote in your calculation for the Moneyball factor, are you qualifying the website visitors, i.e. removing people that bounce quickly? So I think we already covered that, and you said no, you're not doing that.
No, I'm not removing bounce rate. I am removing people from within the dealership. So you do need to get your IP address and take out your desk managers from the equation. But
okay.
I even look at the total visitor count, because as people come and go, each time they're on your website, that's an opportunity to do business. They may not conduct business with you the first time that they're there, but it doesn't mean that we don't want them back. I mean, we want them back. That's why we do things like Thomas mentioned, remarketing. Have somebody shop your inventory and then throw that unit back up in front of them later as they're on ESPN.com or CNN.com or
right.
Who knows, in Facebook in their feed.
Okay. So let's clear up this point, because John wrote in, and he had a good question, because I thought I had the answer, and now I'm thinking I don't know the answer. John wrote in, unique visitors or total website visitors?
I look at total website visitors.
Really?
Yes.
Wowza. All right. You got it. And then David.
The premise being, I want to know each time I have an opportunity to do business.
Mm-hmm.
So total gives me each time I had an opportunity to do business. And it forces me to think more retail, and it forces me to adjust if behavior that's happening online isn't consistent with what it is that I am finding out is delivering retail units. We've transformed this industry twice in the last decade. Once with the internet, the second time with a mobile phone. And I'd argue that some of those dynamics are still playing out with mobile phones. I don't know if you saw, but about a month ago, Google basically took all the advertisements on your desktop that used to be on the side
right off. Yeah.
And that was the tip of the cap to the fact that, especially in automotive, somewhere between 50% and 70% of the visitors that are coming to your dealership website are coming to you through a mobile phone. So I'd say, guys, if you're looking at your stuff on this 27-inch cool Mac monitor because you work for a big dealer group, just remember, that's not how your customers are looking at this stuff. Get to your smartphone. Look at it on that. See how quickly it loads and realize that you don't need all that high-definition imagery. You just need good, solid pictures that load quickly.
You heard the man. All right. No, we already did that question. Okay, Josh had a follow-up question. He says, how could you tailor this to fit to an independent used car dealership with 50-plus cars in inventory and with around 25-plus cars ready on the lot?
So it's the beauty of the Moneyball factor. It is about your make, your model, and your market, Josh. So the most important thing you can do is begin the process of tracking. And so while you may not find scale at the higher levels that you will with a store that will do 200, 300, 400 units a month, you can still know how to allocate your resources and start looking at things. The other side of the Moneyball factor is cost per sale.
Mm-hmm.
If you know your cost per sale and can manage to that in concert with your Moneyball factor, you're going to be a couple steps ahead. And so, Josh, as an independent retailer, I'd start looking at cost per sale as a leading predictor as well.
Okay, Josh, you got a follow-up question? We want to know. All right, next question came in. It was kind of the same question from two different people, so I'm just going to throw them out at you. Okay, Andy wrote in, can you give a guideline for monthly advertising budgets? Kelly wrote in, kind of similar question, how would you recommend we allocate budget for traditional versus digital mediums?
Okay, Andy and Kelly, I get that question a lot. What percentage of traditional versus what percentage of digital? And not to keep referencing back to it, but the Moneyball presentation that Eliana and I did about traditional and digital allocations kind of dives down into that dynamic, because for about 2 years I was spending each month trying to figure out what was the sweet spot in terms of the dollars. I know this, if you're not allocating somewhere between, I'll call 35 and 50% of your dollars to digital, you are losing market share, because other people who are allocating dollars, they're out executing you at the finish line. And in retail, it is all about the detail. So as you look, I would probably start with the idea that I should be spending about 50% of my total budget on digital. In some cases, I've seen dealers go as high as 70. But if you remember back to the original information, find out how much money your manufacturer is spending in your market. If they're spending lots of brand dollars or they're launching a new product and you can allocate your resources so that you can spend more of your money on digital, because that's where the people are and that's how you monetize. And if you look at it, end of the day, all advertising has ever done is tried to get us to where the people are. And when you look at the traffic to your website, if somewhere between 50 and 70% of it is coming from a smartphone, man, you've got to make sure you're on that location. You got to be make sure that that's fundamentally where I allocate my primary resources.
Right.
I'd even go so far as to say, if 50% of my traffic is coming to me from a smartphone, then 50% of my allocation of advertising should go to that particular medium. If it's 70%, even higher. It's a good place to start.
I don't know if a lot of dealerships are going to do that, Jim, but we'll see. You know,
The Car Dog Millionaire will.
I know. Ooh, people wrote in. Ooh, what? Okay. All right, next question comes in from Chris. So we still have some more questions about moneyballing, all right?
All right.
Chris wrote in, one last time to really make it clear, the only visitors that should be disqualified from the moneyball factor are dealership employees, correct?
Yes. Or... Vendors. Anybody who's not a customer, yeah.
And has no intention of being a customer. So
like,
that vendors or employees. Okay. Okay. Michelle wanted to know, can the money ball be applied to new car sales equally to used car sales?
They could be. I mean, it's going to be a different ratio. But what I found over time, when I was working at the dealership, not as a vendor at the dealership, but in the e-commerce department, and this is kind of like 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. So for those that were in the business at that time, I mean, it was rough. We weren't just trying to sell new cars.
I was in the business then. It was hard.
We were just trying to sell anything. So the incrementality comes from the combination of new and used. So you'd want to keep them together first and foremost. The place where I would create the nuance, and I mentioned it briefly in the presentation earlier, is between the turn rates for new cars versus the turn rates for used cars. Your day supply, as you look at the automotive Bermuda Triangle, is going to be the place where you want to nuance that out. If you want to, you could. I mean, like I was saying, the more you break it down to a level of understanding, you're going to be able to say, okay, my money ball factor for new is 0.75, and my moneyball factor for used is 0.65, so my moneyball factor overall is 1.4. And you could do that, and you could even break down the repair orders. You could go, okay, my high-margin transmission repair and engine repair orders are, you know, 5 of the 13 that I mentioned, and 8 of the 13 are oil changes. I just think at some point you start getting distortion or noise in the system. So just be sensitive to the idea that you may not be tracking meaningful information anymore if that stuff isn't correlating to departmental profitability or dealership profitability, then you got to back up and say, wait a second, I've gone just a little bit too far. But it's a good experience to find out.
I think maybe Michelle was asking because I think she might be with a used car dealership. We just want to know, it would work for any dealership, right? Whether they're new and used or just used. Okay. Yeah. Okay, follow-up question from John. He says, do you remove any percentage of web visitors for bots, B-O-T-S?
Absolutely. Oh. When and if you recognize they're there, you have to take them out. You want to exclude those IP addresses and or locations. If you're a dealership in Chicago and you're getting tons of traffic from Portland, Maine, and they're all 99% bounce rate, it's 1,200 visitors, you got to get rid of them, right? Okay. They don't count, for sure. Good all question.
Right. Great question, John. Okay, another question came in from Tony. Tony's got a problem. He says he's a BDC director and his GM wants... Wait, I'm a BDC director, and my GM wants me to do all of the IT work. Do you have any advice? How do I tell him that I'm not an IT expert and that I am just trying to run the BDC? Can you tell that to your GM?
Tony, that's a tough conversation, my friend.
Is that a whole nother webinar?
Tony, you're basically asking for a different job. When it comes down to it, and you can work in that dealership, right, but just not in that role because you're basically saying you want to go out and sell cars or you want to go out and be a desk manager or you want to spin paper in F&I. But if your GM doesn't get that you're not the IT guy, I don't think they'll quite understand that. I mean, you could try to have that conversation. I'd encourage you even to use the job descriptions, but I'm not asking guys to go in and basically turn in their resignation. I just tell them that you're going to want to be in a different place than that organization. I mean, leadership's trying to take you to the best place, the best way they know how, and you've got to respect that. Without that as a foundation, then you're going to be in a bad place anyway. So what I tell them is, you know, you want to take on a different role or responsibility in the organization, and if you're not ready to, then that's a whole different line of thought.
Okay. Well done. All right, Tony, let us know if you have a follow-up question. Okay, I think this might be one of our last questions. Comes in from Larry. He says, what would be an acceptable overall bounce rate for your website?
Okay, so the acceptable bounce rate level actually depends on your website provider. And there's several great ones out there. DealerOn is one of the best.
Thank you.
What you want to make sure is if you look at the bounce rate, it's almost like your make, your model, your market. I've got a dealer group of 10 that I work with, and the bounce rate behaves differently for each of the different website providers that are out there. So it's all relative, I guess, is the best thing to say. And knowing that if you have a product that delivers people to the actual unit, that your bounce rate may actually go up as your sales increase. So bounce rate is not necessarily a bad thing. It's more about understanding the story behind the numbers. And part of the story behind the numbers is where you're sending the traffic as well as who your internet service provider happens to be. Yes.
All right. Larry, thank you so much for the final question of the day. David wrote in, he agrees with you exactly with what you just said. And he also wanted me to let you know that Moneyball factor was definitely worth the price of admission today. So thank you so much, Jim. Another fabulous Dealer On webinar presentation. I really appreciate it. And don't forget, everyone, you can check out Jim's previous appearances on the show by going to dealeron.com/webinar and clicking on the link on the right-hand side for view previous webinars. Remember, he was on once before where he talked about the automotive Bermuda Triangle, and he was on again where all he talked about was Moneyball. All right, so go check those out and pick up your copy of Car Dog Millionaire. Jim, thank you so much. What's going to happen when the next time you come on? Are you going to, like, make a short movie or something?
I don't know. We've got a movie online, if you haven't seen it, called Quick Shop.
What? I didn't know that. I was just kidding.
No, go to our YouTube channel. You'll love it.
Well, you heard it, man. All right. Thank you so much, Jim. It was so nice having you on the show again.
Eliana, I'm going to go get a Reuben sandwich and enjoy Cinco de Mayo. Thank you so much.
That's exactly what you should have on Cinco de Mayo. All right. Thank you so much. Great presentation. We hope you enjoyed it. I want to remind the audience that a link to download a copy of today's webinar recording is going to be emailed to you later today. So please don't forget to share it with your friends and colleagues. Today's webinar is also going to be posted online within 24 hours. All you have to do is go to dealeron.com/webinars. From there, you can view our upcoming webinar schedule or access any of our past webinars, too. And, yeah, this webinar is going to end in just a minute. When it does, you're going to get a short survey. It is literally 6 short questions. We'd love for you to take part in the survey. We want to know what you thought of today's presentation. So let your voice be heard, my friends. And, invitations are going to be going out tomorrow for our next Dealer On webinar. You're going to like this one, people. The pricing strategy that sells more new cars. Can just changing your pricing strategy help you sell more new cars, like a lot more new cars? According to Jason Rice, owner of Lot Pop, absolutely. In fact, he says it's the key to moving more metal that many dealerships overlook, but is far and away the one technique that can bring every dealership the swiftest and most dramatic results. Sounds too good to be true? Tune in and find out for yourself. Attendees of this incredibly enlightening one-hour webinar are going to learn how to increase exposure on new cars, why invoice minus rebates does not work, and when you should change prices and why. If you're looking for a way to positively affect your dealership's bottom line with fewer missed opportunities for profit improvement, and let's get real, who isn't? Then this is a must-see presentation. It's another hour of automotive awesomeness where we'll be discussing the pricing strategy that will sell more new cars. So don't you dare miss this webinar. Register now. And don't forget, DealerOn's weekly webinars are held Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain, and 9 a.m. Pacific. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions regarding these webinars and our topics, hey, contact me directly. Again, my name is Eliana Raggio, and I love to hear from you. So track me down online. I'm on Google, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. I'm everywhere. I'm on all the automotive social networks, or just email me directly at Eliana@DealerOn.com. Thank you all so very much for spending this time with us today, and I hope to see you all on another webinar in our continuing education series. Take care.